This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The landscape of the Democratic presidential primary race has shifted in the last month. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg has surged to join Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and former Vice President Joe Biden in that top group of candidates. At the same time, the House Intelligence Committee has been holding impeachment hearings in Washington. Are those hearings distracting voters from the key issues in the presidential race? In Wednesday night's debate, Bernie Sanders said the answer is no.
What the American people understand is that the Congress can walk and chew bubble gum at the same time. In other words, we can deal with Trump's corruption, but we also have to stand up for the working families of this country. We also have to stand up to the fact that our political system is corrupt, dominated by a handful of billionaires, and that our economy is rigged with three people owning more wealth than the bottom half of America. We can do it all when we rally the American people in the cause of justice.
Where do things stand in this race with roughly 10 weeks to go before the Iowa caucuses? We've got a great panel of reporters with us today, reporters who've been following this race very closely. With us today, Clay Masters of Iowa Public Radio, Josh Rogers of New Hampshire Public Radio, and Paul Heintz of 7 Days. Hey, it's great to have you all on the program today.
Hey, Bob.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
What are your thoughts about this Democratic presidential race? Do you think there's one candidate who has the best chance of defeating President Trump in November? Are the impeachment hearings distracting voters from the key issues in this race? Maybe you have some thoughts about why Mayor Pete Buttigieg is rising in the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire. Well, let's just start today with the question that Bernie Sanders just addressed. Are the impeachment hearings having an impact on the discussion of key issues in the 2020 Democratic presidential race? Clay Masters, let's start with you. Are voters in Iowa paying attention to both of these events?
I think they are. Likely caucusgoers that I have been talking to at a lot of these events, when I ask them about the impeachment inquiry, they're plugged in, they're interested, they want to know what's going on. And when I ask them, you know, does that affect the way that you're thinking about this race that you're trying to make a decision as to who you're going to caucus for on February 3rd, the answer is always a kind of like, not really. I mean, they're paying attention to it, but a presidential candidate's position on whether or not the president should be impeached, which, you know, most of them are saying that they feel that the inquiry should go forward, isn't persuading them as to what's going to make them show up and caucus already. Because the caucuses, you got to remember, it's not voting, it's caucusing. It's this very different process where you meet in high school gyms and people's homes and you physically, you know, move from one side of the room to the other. It takes, you know, a little bit more of a commitment from those that are going there. So they're already plugged in and they're just trying to winnow the field in their head.
I was thinking, Clay, I've heard from a number of presidential candidates when they get interviewed in the national press and they're asked as they go and meet people in Iowa, as they meet with folks in New Hampshire, is the issue of impeachment coming up on a lot of voters' radar screen? And almost to a person, those candidates say, yeah, not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, a lot of the questions that candidates are getting, you know, a lot of times they'll open it up to question and answer. And the questions are about health care, about climate change comes up at every candidate's town halls and every rally if they're question and answer. You hear about immigration, questions about, you know, what their plan would be regarding immigration or health care. I mean, people are just wanting to know where these candidates stand on the issues, especially when it takes even more commitment for somebody to show up in caucus. So, yeah, you're not hearing it a lot on the stump. Sometimes people get asked about it, and you were hearing a lot more of it being asked about at these different events around the time when, you know, the inquiry was actually launched. But it's kind of died down a little bit.
Josh Rogers, what's the view from New Hampshire? Do you think voters in New Hampshire are following the impeachment hearings closely, and has it taken attention away from the presidential race?
Well, I'm going to be going out this weekend. There are going to be a bunch of candidates here, and that was one thing I was hoping to ascertain. I mean, obviously, this week there has been a great deal of information to digest on the impeachment front. When the public phase of the inquiry began, last week, Elizabeth Warren was in New Hampshire, and I went out to see her with an eye towards maybe doing an impeachment-themed story. That didn't come to pass because she made only a glancing reference to it at the event that I was at, which was a very organized labor-themed event. And the voters there were interested in much more economic issues, health care, pensions, minimum wage, that sort of thing. So I decided not to write something then. I mean, this weekend will be interesting. New Hampshire is going to be full of candidates. There was a lot that happened this week on the impeachment front. But I would agree with Clay that this is not something that I've heard candidates much emphasize. I mean, they are mostly of like mind. And, you know, remember, a lot of these folks are senators who are going to have to be jurors should the process end up there. So, you know, they're a bit more circumspect on what they say. You know, it'll be interesting when it gets to the Senate, assuming it does, how having all of those folks have to be at the hearings affects the campaigning. But, you know, all the web numbers of our live stream of the impeachment suggest that voters here are quite engaged. And, you know, the human mind can contain a lot. So we'll see this weekend what voters say about what they've been focusing on this week in particular.
Josh, Clay just mentioned climate change, health care, immigration, economic issues. Those are the issues on the minds of folks in Iowa. Would you agree that that's also true in New Hampshire?
I think that's coming up. I think those are coming up a lot. I mean, it depends on the kind of voter you're talking about. If you're talking about a voter who is thinking about this as a primary where you're really trying to tease out differences, I think the broad priorities of people who plan to vote on the Democratic side of the primary are shared. They want something done on health care, whether they want a full Medicare for all or, you know, Medicare for all who want it, as Biden and Buttigieg like to refer to it. That's certainly a dividing line. All want action on climate change. People are interested in economic policies that would benefit those at the lower end of the spectrum. I mean, that's, you know, hardly shocking that that would be the case among Democratic primary voters. But the ones who are looking to tease out differences, you know, we've obviously spent a lot of time scrutinizing people's health care policies. And, you know, that's something that I've heard from voters at events. When you attend a Sanders or a Warren event, you find plenty of people who are attracted to them due to their stance on health care. And, you know, I spent a bunch of time following Pete Buttigieg around recently, and, you know, concerns over disruption of the current system was something I heard from a lot of people who are drawn to him, which, you know, again, isn't terribly surprising given their respective stances on the issue.
Today in the program, we're looking at the state of the Democratic presidential race. Just been hearing from Josh Rogers and Clay Masters about the situation in Iowa and New Hampshire, that climate change, health care, immigration, economic issues seem to be at the forefront of many voters' minds. Paul Heintz, Vermont's presidential primary isn't getting a lot of attention. It's one of about a dozen states that'll be voting on Super Tuesday, March 3rd. But from the folks that you talk to, how does the issue of impeachment rank with the other issues in the Democratic race?
Well, you know, I don't know that many Vermonters are thinking too much about how they'll vote on Super Tuesday. I bet a lot of people don't remember that that's actually when they do vote. But it is town meeting day, as you say, and it is early in the process. It's going to be a really big day this year, bigger than usual, because California is now going to be voting then. So there'll be a ton of delegates up for grabs. Vermont will not be providing all that many of them. But, you know, I think the way that this the way that impeachment is playing right now is that it's certainly taking up a lot of the national attention. You know, it's taking up most of the minutes on cable television broadcasts. It is certainly, I think, diverting the national conversation away from the Democratic primary. But, you know, that's not really the worst thing in the world for someone like Senator Sanders, who isn't really looking for a big media moment. You know, he's not one of these newer candidates who needs to sort of have a breakout moment and introduce himself to the American people. People know who Senator Sanders is, and the work that he's doing is organizing on the ground, building up this huge base of donors, and he can do all that stuff kind of more quietly behind the scenes. I don't think that right now having this distraction is the worst thing in the world for him. Josh did allude to the fact that the Senate trial, assuming that the House votes to impeach. The Senate trial is likely to take place in January at the heat of the of campaigning in Iowa, New Hampshire, and that will be a real problem for Sanders and for the other senators in the race who will be quite occupied in Washington. I'll be very curious to see whether what Sanders' attendance record is in January. You know, he has missed many key votes recently, and I think for the most part, people in Vermont have not been too concerned about that because they see him, you know, out there representing them on the national stage. But with something as important as a trial, an impeachment trial, I would imagine that Vermonters are going to be expecting him to be doing his day job. So that will be a real complication.
Paul, don't you think he has to be there?
Yes, I do think he has to be there. And I don't know exactly how it's going to be structured. I don't know, you know, how many days a week the Senate will be meeting. Obviously, you know, the way things usually work in Congress, there's still, even when the Senate is in session, there's still 3 or 4 days during which a candidate can get out of D.C. and head to Iowa, head to New Hampshire. No doubt he will be doing it then. But, you know, if you're someone like Mayor Pete or Vice President Biden, and you don't really have a day job right now, it's you can put in more time in those early states. And that is really that actually does matter. As Josh and Clay no doubt will say, being there is key. You got to be on the ground.
Clay, the latest Des Moines Register poll, and that's a poll I think that has a pretty good track record, shows mm-hmm. there's been a recent surge by Mayor Pete Buttigieg and that race really now has 4 front runners: Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and former Vice President Joe Biden. Here's Buttigieg speaking on Wednesday night about the value that his experience as a small town mayor has in this race.
Washington experience is not the only experience that matters. There's more than 100 years of Washington experience on this stage. And where are we right now as a country? I have the experience of bringing people together to get something done.
So, Clay, you're on the ground there in Iowa. Buttigieg is surging in Iowa. Tell us why.
Well, the first time I covered Buttigieg was February of this year, and it was a house party. Maybe 6 people were there. It was like maybe a dozen, between 6 and 12, and people were just kind of getting introduced to him. And he had a viral moment in a CNN town hall. People started having interest, and then in April there was a pretty big rally for him outside. More than 1,000 people showed up. So, you know, the rule about Iowa is come here early and come here often, and he's been doing that. And I think also, as you get closer and closer to caucuses, people are, you know, starting to get engaged. There's a reason that you see high numbers early on for people like Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. People know who they are. It's name ID. So now we're starting to see this race actually kind of come into focus a little bit more. On November 1st, there was the Liberty and Justice celebration here in Des Moines, which is 13,000 people filled this arena to hear speeches from the different candidates. And beforehand, the candidates all have their kind of own little rally ahead of time. And I think the contrast, when I think about Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg, when you looked at what was going on at the Buttigieg rally, people were there in matching yellow shirts, and, you know, the musician Ben Harper was performing, and it was very well, it looked very well organized, and, you know, everybody was matching in their yellow shirts and everything and chanting and marching as they walked to the arena. Bernie Sanders had a very different kind of rally. People weren't wearing matching T-shirts. They were all wearing, you know, street clothes. The band was young men that were playing brass instruments, and I mean, we heard from he had people talk about minimum wage workers talking about their troubles with health care. He had a small farmer talking. So you really saw a difference between their different organizations and the messages that they were trying to convey. And I think Pete Buttigieg is somebody that is new to the scene, and people, what's the old adage, like people want to, Democrats want to fall in love with their candidate, and people are, you know, liking the story that this guy has. And he's also bringing out people that I've talked to who are more either Republicans or independent voters. So he's just kind of a different character that nobody has ever paid attention to before. The one issue he has is this Iowa poll, which is done by Ann Selzer, and she's kind of the gold standard of polling here in Iowa, is that you don't want to peak too early. And he has just skyrocketed forward. So that poll also showed that while more Iowans have said that they've made up their minds, nearly two-thirds of likely Democratic caucus-goers say they can be persuaded to pick someone else. And this indicates that the race is still pretty open.
Josh, polls in New Hampshire also show that Mayor Pete is rising there. Do you think moderate Democrats in New Hampshire are seeking an alternative to Joe Biden?
I think there's definitely some of that going on. The generational aspect of the Buttigieg candidacy is not to be overlooked. I wrote he did this in Iowa and he did this in New Hampshire. He had these kind of John McCain-like bus tours where reporters could ride with him, ask whatever they wanted over a few days. And, you know, I rode on the bus for a day and, you know, we had three or four events where, you know, Mayor Pete got off the bus. He's a good speaker. The crowds he's drawing do include moderates, do include some Republicans, do include a lot of older people who said to me, look, I'm 70 years old. Like, I don't think I should be president. And, you know, you could say that Buttigieg fits neatly into kind of an old person's idea of a young person category. Mm-hmm. He's certainly well-spoken. The fact that he's from outside Washington is something he's trying to work to his advantage. And there are a lot of people out there who are a little bit scared of some of the policies proposed by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are Democrats. There are a lot who would tell you that they think Buttigieg is, in their minds, the kind of clearest antidote to Trump. I mean, that's obviously a point that's going to be debated. I mean, the predominant concern among voters I talk to, you know, policies aside, still boils down to, I want to make sure I pick a candidate who can beat Donald Trump. There are a lot of people I talk to who support Buttigieg who thinks he can. And, you know, he's certainly, to Clay's point, he's been on the rise here. You know, we do have a lot of time. And while he's clearly in what I would consider kind of the top clump of candidates, like, there's still room for that clump to kind of disarticulate and, you know, change its membership.
Yeah, and I don't this is Clay again from Iowa, but I don't know if when you were following Pete Buttigieg like I was in Iowa, it was interesting for me to go to these different events that were not these big structural or these big structured events where, you know, people kind of were astroturfing, where people were coming in from the outside. But what I noticed is that there was just a lot of curiosity to see this guy. So you go to these smaller towns that are far away from the large cities, and, you know, one night I think it was a Friday or a Saturday night, Buttigieg was in the small town Decorah, where they had to raise up the curtain in the high school gym so they could let more people in. And I know crowds don't vote, but there's just like an interest to actually see what this guy is about in person. And that's a more authentic gauge, I feel like, from understanding, you know, where this interest is surging.
I would say that's true in New Hampshire as well. And, you know, people are, to Clay's point, kind of really starting to pay attention and try to make up their minds, or at least start to make up their minds. I mean, we have a long ways to go, and it's worth remembering that the average voter doesn't know necessarily a lot about even somebody as familiar to them as Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, or, you know, a lot. I mean, they have a sense of Joe Biden. I mean, Buttigieg is definitely new compared to all those people, and there are a lot of people who would say, you know, I want someone who can win, and, you know, I'm certainly hearing plenty of things like, this isn't, you know, in the crowd at a Biden event, but at a Buttigieg event where they say, like, look, like, I might be comfortable with Joe Biden, but I don't think, you know, he's got it anymore or ever had it in the first place. I mean, that's at a Buttigieg event, but that's what I've been told by many people.
Paul, what do you see as the reasons why Buttigieg is the person emerging from this large pack of Democratic candidates to challenge the front runners?
Well, I would agree with most of what Clay and Josh said, and I do think that there's a real advantage to being fresh and new. And I you know, there's certainly a lot of excitement around him, around that. I've been kind of curious, conversely, about whether we'll see any kind of surge at any point from Senator Sanders. We've seen many of these candidates have their moments in the sun this cycle. Harris, Warren, Buttigieg, you know, certainly Biden when he first got in. But Sanders has been relatively stable, and he has, you know, he hasn't dipped too far down. Like he's had some movement, but he's also not really surged to the front at all. And you know, I think part of that might be due to the fact that many of Sanders' supporters are pretty hardcore supporters who locked in early, haven't changed their minds all that much. We're probably with him last time around. You know, I'm curious to see whether he is able to expand that coalition, whether he's able, whether he will have that moment. And if so, you know, now is probably the time to start having that moment. I mean, you don't, Clay's right, you don't want to peak too early. You also don't want to peak too late. Last time around in Iowa, he, you know, he really, you could feel the momentum going his direction, you know, late in around this time, late in the year. And then in January, he was really, really cruising, but he didn't quite have enough time to catch up with Hillary Clinton, and he came just shy of defeating her in the Iowa caucuses there. I, you know, we might have seen a different series of events if he had, if he'd just gotten a little bit closer and had won last time around. So, yeah, I'm curious whether he will have one of those moments as well.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today on the program, we're looking at the Democratic presidential primary race. With us today, Josh Rogers of New Hampshire Public Radio, Clay Masters of Iowa Public Radio, and Paul Heintz of 7 Days. Your thoughts? We've been talking about health care as an issue in a lot of the states. On one side in the Democratic race, we have Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who support a Medicare for All plan. Under that approach, private health insurance companies would be eliminated and everyone would get their coverage through Medicare. Most of the other candidates support what is known as Medicare for All who want it. It would be an option that people could choose if they wanted to. And at that Wednesday night debate, Pete Buttigieg said he supports the second approach as a way to bring people together on the issue of health care.
The reason I insist on Medicare for all who want it as the strategy to deliver on that goal we share of universal health care is that that is something that, as a governing strategy, we can unify the American people around. Creating a version of Medicare, making it available to anybody who wants it, but without the divisive step of ordering people onto it, whether they want to or not. And I believe that commanding people to accept that option, whether we wait 3 years, as Senator Warren has proposed, or whether you do it right out of the gate, is not the right approach to unify the American people around a very, very big transformation that we now have an opportunity to deliver.
Bernie Sanders, who likes to mention that he wrote the damn bill, as he says that in most of the debates, and including on Wednesday night, he says the Buttigieg and Biden approach still allows the private health insurance companies to be in a position to reap enormous profits. Here's what he said in the Wednesday night debate.
Now, some of the people up here think that we should not take on the insurance industry. We should not take on the pharmaceutical industry. But you know what? If you think back to FDR, and if you think back to JFK and Harry Truman and Barack Obama, as a matter of fact, people have been talking about health care for all. Well, you know what? I think now is the time.
Clay, the candidates seem to think that the health care issue marks a major distinction between them. Health care, Medicare for all, or Medicare for all who want it. Do you think voters in Iowa see it that way?
Yeah, and with Elizabeth Warren, you know, she was criticized for quite a while for not coming out with a way for paying for Medicare for All, which Bernie Sanders has from, you know, the get-go. She has released a plan, and, you know, I'm giving you the cliff notes here, but in the third year of her presidency, it will be able to be implemented. And, I mean, like, a lot of the people that are attracted to a Medicare for All plan, I think that there is a section of those that will kind of default back to Bernie Sanders because they feel like it's going to be a quicker change thing here. But I still feel like, you know, when you see, when I was out with Pete Buttigieg earlier this month as he was hitting all these campaign stops, he was regularly contrasting himself with Elizabeth Warren. I mean, it's clear that the two of them were kind of duking it out a lot that early that first week of November. We'll see if shifts in the polls will change that. I mean, here in Iowa, we are talking about that Iowa poll that came out showing that 25% were listing Buttigieg as their first interest in a candidate. And then it was 16% for Warren, followed by Biden and Sanders, both at 15%. And the margin of error is 4% there. So, I mean, it's a close race, really. And healthcare is going to continue, I think. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. And I think there's going to be, you know, barbs are going to continue flying about whose plan is an easier thing to get done quicker.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Pete, who is calling from Victory Mills, New York. Hey, Pete, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, sir.
What's on your mind?
Hello.
Yep. What's on your mind today?
We all have to listen to all of these candidates because of everything they've seen. They have a lot of good ideas. Like Pete Buttigieg, you listen to him. He's got substance. He's a very good speaker, and I haven't really made up my mind yet as to who I'm going to vote for, but it will not be Donald Trump.
Do you have a feeling, Pete, of who is the strongest Democratic candidate to run against President Trump?
I don't know. They say Biden is the best, but we've got a long way to go yet, and it's hard to say, you know.
All right, Pete, we appreciate your phone call very much. Let's turn to Sue, who is calling from Milton. Hi, Sue. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Well,
do you have a comment?
Well, I do. I have a comment about Bernie. I think what I'm finding is that the mainstream media, at least, has misrepresented a lot of what's going on with this campaign. I mean, in a sense, it's a stealth campaign. I mean, to talk about Bernie peaking in Iowa or something. But, I mean, what a lot of the public don't know is that he has a very, very strong grassroots support. And he has, just in the last quarter, gained thousands upon thousands of campaign volunteers. He has over 1 million campaign volunteers out there. And he's packing the stadiums, and nobody's covering those events. I mean, when you're packing 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 people into a rally, that's significant. That says something. These people aren't just going there for the entertainment. They're going there to support him. And we don't see that with the other candidates. You know, we see Mayor Pete with a couple of hundred people dancing in the grass. I mean, we don't really have any way of comparing. And, you know, I just find that personally insulting.
Sue, you raise a very important point. Josh, the Sanders campaign in the last month has been very critical of the way that the national news media has covered the campaign. They think they're being ignored. Do they have a point?
Well, I don't know if they have a point. I mean, I think that talking about it is Senator Sanders, you know, makes the point that a lot of media is corporately controlled. He likes to talk to it as the corporate media is ignoring him. And, you know, certainly he was underestimated in 2016. Like, you know, I would say I certainly underestimated his strength as a candidate at first. And he proved to have some real staying power. I do think it is an interesting question, though, as to whether or not Sanders will expand the base of support. He clearly has. He certainly has a strong base of support in New Hampshire. But whether or not he's going to attract new people, or whether or not people who might agree with a lot of his policies are going to be drawn to Elizabeth Warren. I mean, a lot of voters I talk to who are more on the liberal end of the spectrum in New Hampshire are really choosing between Sanders and Warren. And certainly Warren appeared to have a lot of momentum and may still have a lot of momentum. You know, I never underestimate Sanders' ability to mobilize grassroots folks. It's going to be an interesting question in New Hampshire. And, you know, typically in New Hampshire, candidates from neighboring states, you know, they do well here. Since 1972, two-thirds of the time a candidate, when a neighboring state candidate has run, they've won. And, you know, it's been the thinking for a long time that, like, for Sanders and Warren, New Hampshire is definitely going to be crucial. So, you know, for the next, 90 days or whatever it is to the race, to voting day, it's going to be interesting to see what those two campaigns do to, you know, win the sorts of voters. And there are plenty of voters in New Hampshire who are attracted to their policies, but who can do a better job making sure, you know, they pull the lever for them?
Paul, I wanted to go back to health care and Medicare for All for just a moment. As you know, in Vermont in 2014, Governor Peter Shumlin said Vermont couldn't afford the tax burden that would be needed to have a state single-payer system, so he ditched the idea. Do you think that Vermont's failure to go this route is an issue at all in this race?
No, I don't think it's a big issue, because I think some of Governor Shumlin's argument at the time was that we can't go it alone, that perhaps single-payer Medicare for All would work, but it would not work for a small state surrounded by neighbors that were not doing something similar. And I think, you know, he said that this is a problem that has to be solved at the federal level. So, you know, certainly I think Sanders' opponents, both in the primary and the general election, will bring this up, and they have brought this up in the past. But I don't think it's a totally fair argument to make.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Bethel. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, well, thank you for taking my call. I have been a supporter of Elizabeth Warren's and Bernie's for quite a while. But I'm a little alarmed this time, because they're both from states that have Republican governors. And if either one of them wins, those governors will appoint a replacement for them. It will probably be a Republican. So we'll get an advance of, you know, of the guy we want, but then we're going to help Mitch McConnell. So for that reason, I've actually become quite enamored by Pete.
All right, John, that's a very interesting issue. Paul Hines, let me come back to you again. Republican Phil Scott, let's just say that Bernie Sanders is elected president and we have a vacancy in the U.S. Senate. Do you think Phil Scott will feel obligated to appoint a Democrat or an independent to that post?
You know, that's a really great question. And I've not asked the governor this. And if I asked, I'm almost certain he wouldn't respond to it. He wouldn't answer it. But, you know, having covered Governor Scott for some time, I would be pretty surprised if he were to appoint a Republican to fill Senator Sanders' seat. That's not the governor's style. I could see him appointing a caretaker to hold that job until the next election. And I believe you probably know this better than I do, but I believe the way it works is if a vacancy occurs early enough in the term, there's a special election held. Otherwise, it goes the election is held at the normal time. Is that right, Bob?
I think that's correct.
Yeah. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him appoint an independent or perhaps a more moderate Democrat, perhaps someone who would pledge not to run for reelection. But this is, you know, pure speculation on my part here. I have no idea.
This is Vermont Edition, and today we're looking at the Democratic presidential race. With us, Clay Masters of Iowa Public Radio, Paul Hines of 7 Days, and Josh Rogers of New Hampshire Public Radio. One thing I wanted to ask both Josh and Clay, since you're seeing candidates come into the states of Iowa and New Hampshire all the time now, and I think, Clay, you said candidates need to come here often and as much as possible, and that's really what is expected of them. We've been talking about the top four candidates a lot here right now today. But, Clay, is there some other candidate in the pool right now that you're noticing as they go around Iowa, they're starting to generate a little buzz?
Well, since the fourth debate, Amy Klobuchar has been the senator from Minnesota, which is right next door, just north of Iowa. She's making a connection. And that latest poll that came out from the Iowa poll that was published in the Des Moines Register, CNN Mediacom, I mean, that showed her kind of bumping up a little bit. So, I mean, there's some interest in candidates like her. Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, has been organized in the state for a really long time. So, you know, he's got a lot of endorsements from different legislators at the state house here. So, you know, I continue to keep an eye on Booker as well. But I do want to go back to something that I think her name was Sue, the caller that was talking about Bernie Sanders and holding big rallies. With the exception of when he first got into the race back in March, which he had several different rallies that were in larger cities on weekends, nights during the day when larger amounts of people could show up to them. He's been holding a lot of town halls in far-flung parts of the state because that's the objective in Iowa. The Iowa caucuses, the campaigning, it's not about large rallies. It's about getting before smaller crowds, town halls, smaller meet and greets because, you know, they want to actually feel a connection. They want the voters, the caucus goers, to actually feel a connection and feel like they've asked these candidates questions so that they're at the top of their list. And so that's why you can't rule out somebody like an Amy Klobuchar, who continues to have people showing up and interested in kind of having her audition for their support.
Josh, what do you think? Are there some of the candidates?
I would agree that Klobuchar has come up a bit here. You know, perhaps not to the extent that some of her local backers in New Hampshire and I think the senator herself might expect. I mean, she, of the candidates running, she's done a good job of lining up credible people who've been affiliated with, you know, either themselves being successful Democratic politicians in the state or are affiliated with successful Democratic politicians in the state, you know, kind of a successful cadre of endorsers. She spent time here. Her politics are very much of a piece with what Democrats who have been successful in New Hampshire, people like Senator Jeanne Shaheen, Senator Maggie Hassan, former Governor John Lynch, kind of, you know, incremental centrist, kind of I'm a sensible person endeavoring to do sensible things. That's something you essentially the message you hear out of Klobuchar. You know, in a presidential cycle, that may not excite. I mean, I think that she stands a chance of doing better than she is presently. You know, Cory Booker, I think his failure to connect on some level remains kind of an enigma. I mean, he's set up a success, mm-hmm. a decent organization on the ground. He spent a lot of time here. He has a reasonable resume compared to the other candidates. There's a possibility for him, but, you know, I think that window may be closing. You know, Andrew Yang has surprised some people with the amount of support he's picked up in New Hampshire. You know, how that translates down the line, you know, who's to say, but I think that he could do okay in New Hampshire. You know, it does remain, you know, we're getting closer, but there's a lot of time yet for things to shake up and for potentially, you know, if things go south for candidates in the top tier now, you know, there's room for others. I mean, I think a lot of people just really don't know what they're doing.
Paul, as you know, when Bernie Sanders has run for the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate in Vermont, he runs as an independent. He does not run as a Democrat. He gets the Democratic nomination through write-ins, and then he turns it down. Do you think that's an issue at all in this Democratic race?
No, in fact, I don't think it's really come up that much at all this time around. You know, it's a quirky relationship, Senator Sanders, with the Democratic Party. But I think that people who pay attention to national politics were introduced to that relationship during the 2016 primary. It didn't seem to be a huge factor then. I mean, I guess you could argue he lost, so maybe it played some role in it. But, I don't think that people are too concerned about it. I think it seems to me that voters care about where these candidates are on the issues, and they care about whether these Democratic candidates can defeat the president. But I just don't think that they care too much about what he calls himself, so long as he is caucusing with Democrats and he is sharing their opinions on crucial issues.
I mean, this is Josh. I mean, I have heard that complaint sporadically from people who are really, you know, Democratic Party with a capital P kind of loyalist types. And, you know, there was in 2016 the question of whether he could get on the New Hampshire ballot in that you can't run in the Democratic primary as a non-member of the party. But, you know, he was accommodated then. And I'm certainly not hearing that sort of talk from voters.
And, it matters more, as Josh noted, with the party faithful. So that does matter to superdelegates. But this time mm-hmm. around, due to some changes in the way that the Democratic National Convention works, superdelegates are playing a lesser role in the process. I think that they don't have a vote on the first ballot. It's less important to really win over those hardcore Democrats.
And Sanders will say on the stump that we're going to support the nominee, whoever it might be. And that's kind of a wink at that, you know, like I'm running as a Democrat.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Chris in Wallingford. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I wanted to bring a young person's perspective to this. I feel that the people who are going to be most affected by the outcome of this election are young people. So I've offered to my daughter, who is 16, her ability to choose who I vote for in the upcoming primary. Last night she said she's leaning toward Bernie, but the thing that she said that concerns me the most is that her highest priorities of issues are the climate crisis and gun control. And she says she's not hearing enough about either one of them from any of the candidates.
You know, I would, if I could just jump in here, one thing that I've been really surprised about is how little climate change has factored into these debates. Every single time we have one of these national debates, it's like an hour into it before the debate moderators bring up the subject. We've had debate after debate in which healthcare is the focus of the first 20 minutes or half an hour. And then it's almost an afterthought. And, you know, it does seem to me that the Democratic primary voters really care about this issue and the candidates themselves really care about the issue. So why aren't we getting more on that?
Yeah. And
let's
and
go
the,
back to
both. There,
yeah. Let's go back to Clay and Josh
change.
On this one.
The hunger is there. I mean, if you look at Greta Thunberg, the Swedish teen who she held an event in Iowa City a couple months ago, and there were more people there for a lot of the different than a lot of the different presidential candidates get. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman who's endorsed Sanders, she came here for a number of rallies with Sanders earlier this month, and those were really well attended, and that was primarily focused on Green New Deal. I'm also surprised that climate change isn't coming up more on the debate stage, because there's certainly a hunger for it among potential Iowa caucus goers.
I guess I would echo that. In New Hampshire, I would say I guess I can theoretically understand why, you know, people organizing the debates haven't put that front and center, in that they see fewer fault lines between the candidates on that issue than on others. But certainly when you hear voters question candidates, that's often one of the first questions that gets asked at town hall meetings in New Hampshire.
And Josh, do you think that candidates don't want to address the issue of a carbon tax?
Well, it depends on the candidate. But I think that, it is a Democratic primary right now, and it's about getting Democratic votes. And I don't think a carbon tax is necessarily, you know, verboten in terms of trying to appeal to Democratic voters.
Well, this has been a great discussion of the Democratic presidential primary race. Many thanks to our panel of reporters today. It is so great to hear what's happening in Iowa, New Hampshire, and to get the opinions of what's happening in Vermont. So many thanks to Clay Masters of Iowa Public Radio, Josh Rogers of New Hampshire Public Radio, and Paul Heintz of 7 Days. Thank you all very much for being on the program today.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, Bob.
That's it for today's program. With hunting season underway and more than half of Vermont household owning guns, Monday on Vermont Edition, we'll explore how to talk to your kids about gun safety and ethics. Send your questions and comments to Vermont Edition at vpr.org and listen live on Monday at noon. Today's show was directed by Jake Rusnak. Our production team includes Matthew Smith, Karen Anderson, Sam Gail Rosen, Anna St. Marie, and April Chin. We had production assistance from Rick Barrett. Our digital producers are Meg Malone and Elodie Reed. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.